Here's what every corrections director in the United States will say, and I'm saying it too, is that the Department of Corrections is the largest mental health institution in the state. So we are a dumping ground. We have been for years.
That's Rick Ramish, executive director of Colorado's Corrections Department, reminding us earlier this month that the U.S. prison system has become a warehouse for the mentally ill. A facility where that warehousing may be reaching a critical breaking point is at the famous Rikers Island facility, possibly the most famous home for inmates after Alcatraz. And like Alcatraz, it's surrounded by water. In this case, the waters of Long Island Sound and the East River in New York City. Rikers houses more than 12,000 inmates, but it's not technically a prison because most of the inmates held at Rikers are awaiting trial. And 40% of all inmates at Rikers have a diagnosed mental illness, either when they went in or as a result of their confinement.
Like your eyes, you know, start to play tricks on you. Like you start seeing black dots. And you, like, focus on them. It's kind of crazy. It looks crazy. You're trying to escape seeing the black dots, but you can't. It's like, there's really no black dots there, you know? It's crazy.
Former Rikers inmate Ismael Nazario speaking there. He spent 300 days as a teenager in solitary awaiting trial for assault and robbery. Nazario's account of his time at Rikers is part of an investigation into the treatment of young inmates at Rikers conducted by the Center for Investigative Reporting. Daffodil Alton is a video producer and reporter on this story. She joins us today from the land of Alcatraz, San Francisco. Daffodil, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So what did you focus on here? There were incidents that really indicated a pattern of, if not abuse, then questionable policies regarding solitary.
So one of the early things we looked at was a report by Human Rights Watch where they interviewed hundreds of teenagers across the country who were being held in solitary confinement. And one of the numbers that came out of that report was the number of teens held in solitary confinement at Rikers Island. The number was 14% over the course of a year, and that in and of itself is considered quite high. When we started looking into Rikers and doing our reporting at various facilities across the country, over the course of various snapshots over last year, around a quarter of teens were being held on any given day in solitary confinement, which is considered actually, even by adult prison standards, an abnormally high number. And we wanted to understand why so many teens were being held in solitary confinement and for extended periods. We were hearing about 90 days, 100 days.
And insiders at the prison were quite candid with you about the consequences of this. Here's Dr. Robert Cohen, former medical director at Rikers, who's now part of the New York City Board of Corrections.
You can't lock them up all day long and then expect them to behave like anything approaching a model citizen or to be repentant. It's hard to imagine that response being facilitated and enhanced by being treated like a dog.
How does this solitary use at Rikers contribute to chaos and the difficulty of maintaining order there?
What research has shown, there hasn't been a lot of research done in terms of young people and teenagers, but when there's been research done on adults, the violence increases. Something about being isolated and being alone for extended periods of times really exacerbates. If you have any diagnosed mental illness, it makes it worse. And there's no transition out of solitary. You're essentially released suddenly into general population. And the incidences of violence have not gone down as a result of the use of solitary confinement. Temporarily, it's like a Band-Aid. It puts the detainee, the inmate, out of sight, out of mind. But then what's happening is a detainee is seven times more likely to hurt himself or herself when they are in solitary confinement than when they are in general population. So the violence, even self-inflicted violence, increases when someone is in solitary confinement.
Among the details in your investigation is some indication of the conditions inside some of these cells. Here's Daniel Drom, who's a member of the New York City Council.
And when we went into the cell, we saw a rusted bed. We saw a mattress, a foam rubber mattress about this thick, with mold on it. There was graffiti and writing all over the wall. It had been painted. There was dirt around the edges of the floor of the cell. There was a small window to the outside, about this big, and there was a small window on the door as well. And that is the conditions that people who are in solitary, young people, adolescents, have to live in 23 hours a day. And that, to me, is torture.
Talking with the Daffodil Alton, video producer and reporter for the Center for Investigative Reporting on the condition at Rikers Island in New York City. So, Daffodil, do you believe it's torture that's going on at Rikers?
Whether I believe it or not, the United Nations has called it torture. I mean, they have already come out, and we spoke to the special rapporteur on torture, and he told us that it amounts to torture, and it's cruel and inhumane, and that they actually, as a matter of international law, have prohibited for the use on against juveniles. So, we wanted to understand some of the challenges that correction officials are facing when they're dealing with a complicated adolescent population, because in our reporting, we found out also that 3/4 of the teenagers who are in solitary confinement at Rikers have diagnosed mental illnesses. So we talked to them, we made many, many requests just to see, to understand, and they repeatedly refused to let us in to engage in a conversation. At one point, they told us that they were only an adult facility. So really, this begs the question, what is actually going on in there?
Well, you described the lack of cooperation, at least as far as your investigation is concerned, at the facility at Rikers. The closest you get to really hearing from the officers collectively is this individual, the president of the Union for New York City Correctional Officers, Norman Seabrook.
You go in to the belly of the beast and you handle whatever comes your way. But you have to be smart enough to be able to articulate to those young men that are in there, and they have so much testosterone that they are just, it's flying off the walls. And these guys are going at it, and they're going and going and going and going like the Energizer rabbit. They just don't stop. And sometimes you have to use force. And when you use force, I instruct my officers, use whatever force is necessary.
Daffodil Alton, it sounds like this is a situation that's close to out of control, even as he tries to rationalize some of the things you observed.
You know, in their rules and regulations, you can be sent to solitary confinement for having art supplies in your cell, for engaging in, quote, horseplay or noisy behavior. He's talking about teenagers, and this is how teenagers behave. But then you hear a transition to using whatever force is necessary. Now, it is there is a problem situation inside, and they don't have the training necessary to handle a population in need of therapy and counseling and services that are not being provided.
The problem of warehousing mentally ill teens at Rikers Island in New York City. Daffodil Alton is a video producer and reporter for the Center for Investigative Reporting. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.